United States v. Womack. Again, Mr. Hansmeier. Goodness, you have three in a row. Wow.
They don't give you any rest at all, do they?
Right.
Hasn't been a fun week.
You can hyperventilate for a minute if you want.
May it please the court. Dan Hansmeier on behalf of Anthony Womack. This Mr. Womack is no stranger to the Seventh Circuit. This is a crack cocaine case. He's been up and down, up and down, up and down a few times, three times. Essentially, what we're saying, the issue in this case is basically one of these Cunningham issues, where there's this argument made below about progressive punishment, where this individual, essentially, he has a number of convictions, but you look at the actual time served, he essentially has served no time in jail.
11 convictions, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of them. There's no doubt about that. But, you know,
this idea of progressive sentencing to be pretty preposterous, actually. I mean, suppose what your defendant says, well, you know, I've murdered 10 people. I admit it. But I've never been caught for any of those murders, and as a result, I've never served a day in jail. So therefore, you can't sentence me to, you know, 20 years of imprisonment. That's just too abrupt. So you sentence me, let's say, to 6 months for this latest murder. And if I commit another murder, well, maybe I'd get 5 years, you know. But it's got to be progressive. That's preposterous, right?
I think the example you gave is pretty preposterous. The problem is Mr. Womack's not a murderer.
It's always preposterous. I just don't understand it. Kind of free bite at the apple. First crime, have to be punished very lightly. Right? Why?
This isn't... We didn't ask for a 6 month sentence. Well, I didn't represent the guy below, but I think the recommended sentence by the defendant was still 110 months imprisonment, so it's not a slap on the wrist. I think in the context, obviously you can come up with examples.
I just don't understand the relevance of progressive discipline to sentencing. I don't get it.
Right. I mean, it's a...
Do you have it? Can you explain it?
I can't. Well, it's, you know, it's a concept borrowed from, you know, employment law, where you get punished and progressively, sanctioned progressively.
It's a theory the judge can use in sentencing, but it's not a requirement, is it?
No, absolutely not. We're not saying
another theory that if you haven't learned your lesson after 11 times, you're never going to learn it. So now is the time to pay the piper.
Our argument is absolutely not that the judge has to do this. That is absolutely not the argument. Our argument is, look, if the argument is made in a case like this, where the sentence imposed is 22 years for, I would consider a relatively small amount of crack cocaine, you know, the court needs to acknowledge that. And especially in this case where you have the court expressing concern about this very issue on multiple occasions at the first two sentencing. I mean, it's clearly something that is in the judge's head that he is concerned about. So the question is, why didn't he address that? And if he has to address it, is he going to impose a lower sentence? And we think absolutely he will. You know, this is a case that doesn't involve a murder, doesn't involve violence. This is a case that involves about an ounce of crack cocaine. There's no relevant conduct. You know, his guideline, he's a career offender because the six justices on the Supreme Court said aggravated fleeting counts. You know, three said it wasn't. There's a lot of people who think he shouldn't be a career offender, but he is. You know, it's one of these things where you get this extremely long sentence, 22 years, for conduct that is not murder, that is not violent.
There's Title 18 may be cockeyed, but Congress takes these drug offenses very seriously, imposes very, very heavy punishment. A lot of people think it's not right, but there it is, right? That's the law.
But we know courts don't have to agree with Congress. I mean, that's United States v. Corner, in bond case from this court. We know they don't have to, and if we give a reason why courts should not, we think it should be addressed. And we think this progressive punishment in this case, under these facts, makes sense.
What's special about progressive punishment in this case?
Well, his prior time spent in jail was a total of 4 months in boot camp. That's it.
Now, what is the relevance of that? That he thought our criminal justice system is a joke, and you never get serious, you never get heavily punished, or what?
So the 3553A effects, especially deterrence. Like, I mean, if the whole idea is to deter someone, protect the public, is a 22-year sentence necessary for that, or will a 9-year sentence do the trick? I mean, that's the argument. The argument in this case is, look, he's never been punished significantly, so give him something reasonable. We're not asking for a year and a day. We're not asking for 3 years, 2 years, 5 years, not even 7 years. He asked for 9 years. That's enough. In this case, that's enough to deter. That's enough to protect the public.
What's the relevance of the 4 months in boot camp?
The relevance is that he hasn't been significantly deterred by his prior sentences. I mean, that's the argument.
Well, you're supposed to be deterred by the threat of punishment. You're supposed to be deterred from your first crime, not just from your nth crime.
Well, I understand that. But if you're looking at the 3553A factors, and that's what you're trying to determine.
What you're really saying is he was not adequately punished the first time. You think that first sentences actually should be very heavy, right? No, that's your position. That's the implication of your position.
Well, absolutely. Not on a...
You're saying the only way people are deterred is if they're punished.
No, that's absolutely not what I'm saying.
Punish them ahead. No, that is your position. That 4 months was a mistake. That 4 months in boot camp was a mistake. Didn't deter him from future crimes, right?
No, I mean, the argument below was you're
No, that's your argument. 4 months was too light. He'd been better off with a heavier sentence, because that would have deterred him from the future crimes.
I mean, maybe it would have.
That's the implication of your argument. Think about it.
I disagree, because the implication of the argument is that if you're punished more than once, the punish becomes progressive, so we don't over-punish you. So it doesn't mean that your first punishment is too severe. It means that if you're punished successively, it's not too severe.
The first punishment was too light because it didn't deter. That's what you're not thinking about what the actual logic of your position. You haven't thought it through.
No, it's progressive. So you start at A, you go to B, you go to C, it's progressive. You wouldn't start at C. I mean, this first sentence would be A, the second B, the third C. You wouldn't start at C to avoid A and B.
If the first sentence were excessive, would you think the next one should be lower?
No, absolutely not. That's progressive punishment. It gets more severe.
Well,
the punishment gets more severe.
Suppose he started out very severe, more severe than necessary.
Well,
would you then, to balance it off the next time out, give a lower sentence?
That's not the argument we made, though.
I didn't think it was.
No. The argument would be
more
severe.
I was just carrying it to its ridiculous conclusion. I don't understand the progressive either, but I understand what you're saying.
Okay.
That when you whack a kid, you tell him, next time I'm going to do it harder.
Right.
So they just got very, very hard is what he did.
Right. Sort of like raising children.
Yeah.
That's basically the argument. You don't throw the kid.
The problem is that criminal punishment is not quite like raising children.
Well, I'll tell you what.
It may even be easier. But go ahead.
There are some similarities between our clients and children. But the bottom line is, we just think the argument should... I don't care if the judge... You know, Judge Posner, you might be right. Maybe no one would buy this. Well, that's not even true. There are courts that do buy it. I mean, yeah. We've cited cases that this argument has been bought.
Well, there were 11 previous ones that didn't buy it.
Well, that's fine. If there's at least 5 that have, maybe this judge would buy it. And that's what we want. We want an opportunity for this judge to address the argument and say, yes, I buy it, or no, I agree with Judge Posner, this is ridiculous. That's what we want. That's all we want. I'm not saying he has to do it. I'm not saying he will do it. We think that he should do it. That's the argument.
Thanks.
Fair enough?
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hansmeier. Mr. Lee?
I take it you're not the progressive type.
No, Your Honor. Well,
there you are.
Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Jungmin Lee, and I represent the United States of America. The sole issue in this case is whether the district court's sentence was procedurally reasonable. The answer to that question is yes, for the following two reasons. First, the district court adequately explained its reasoning for the sentence. And second, the district court did not impose a sentence based on clearly erroneous facts. Looking at the first issue and whether the district court failed to adequately explain the chosen sentence, the district court here based its reasoning on various 3553A factors, which the court commented at length, as the record clearly indicates. Regarding appellant's argument that the district court failed to address its mitigation argument concerning progressive punishment, the district court addressed the mitigation arguments raised by appellant during the resentencing hearing. While the court did not mention the words progressive punishment, it was not required to do so, as this court has held previously in several occasions, including in United States v. Perez, the district court does not have to say magic words at sentencing for the sentence to be reasonable. Instead, the court examined the concepts underlying appellant's progressive punishment argument. Appellant's point regarding progressive punishment was used in furtherance of his overall argument that the career offender guidelines overstated the seriousness and history of the appellant. In response, the district court noted that it could effectively disregard the career offender guidelines and sentence the appellant anywhere as authorized by statute below or above the guidelines. In particular, it noted that it could have sentenced the appellant below the guidelines as advanced by appellant in his progressive punishment argument. However, in this case, the district court noted that applying the sentencing guidelines simply accounts for appellant's choice over the years to live a lawless life. The court rebutted the progressive punishment argument by relying not at the length of his prior incarcerations, but at the sheer number of his convictions. The court's ultimate position here at sentencing was that the number of convictions was so great to outweigh and overcome other mitigating factors when examining appellant's history. It noted that the appellant committed one serious offense after another since he turned 18. In particular, it noted that while there are many arguments concerning his history, his total number of 48 traffic violation-related convictions meant that his criminal history was not overrepresented, that instead it was an accurate reflection of the fact that the appellant was not willing to live within society's rules.
Now, his discussion of the shooting incident, did he get that right?
Yes, Your Honor. Regarding this discussion of the shooting incident, it's clear from the record that the district court was correct. He did not erroneously characterize the incident as taking a shot at someone. As appellant previously stated, the appellant shot a firearm into a house knowing that somebody was inside. What appellant failed to mention was that prior to the court's assertion that the appellant took a shot at someone, just moments before, it noted that appellant took a pretty good effort at shooting somebody once back in 1992. The underlying facts in the record are consistent with the district court's phrasing that appellant took a shot at someone. When appellant knew that someone was in the house, fired his gun into the house, and did not care whether the bullet hit the person inside.
Where did the bullet hit the house?
Your Honor, the record is unclear where. It's just clear that he fired the gun into the house knowing somebody was inside.
He knew that his brother was inside, specifically.
Yes, Your Honor. And he still fired his gun into the house. It was entirely reasonable for the judge in that case to characterize the incident as a pretty good effort at shooting someone. The important point to note, however, Your Honor, is that the district court's statement of taking a shot at someone was not really a finding. It was more merely a common-sense phrasing by the court to acknowledge his past dangerous and violent conduct in the context of his entire history.
And the judge's comment about it being a pretty good stab at shooting somebody, that was in response to an argument being made by the defendant that he had never shot anyone or something like
yes,
that?
Yes, Your Honor. The defendant was making, at the sentencing hearing, the defendant's attorney was making the argument that the defendant was not the kind of violent criminal who had shot at somebody. The judge only inserted that comment in response to that, the argument that the defense counsel was making. Additionally, the district court was correct in stating that the aggravated discharge of a firearm was a crime of violence. The fact that the conviction was too old to receive points under the guidelines has no effect on whether the offense meets the definition of a crime of violence. And more significantly, the district court considered this conviction not to count towards career offender classification, but only to as it pertained to appellant's history and characteristics. The court was within its discretion to consider this conviction and the underlying conduct under 3553A. and the court emphasized the kind of violent conduct stemming from appellant's conviction as a basis for its sentencing. It described the conviction as a serious violent felony, which it is, Your Honor. Ultimately, the district court relied on the 1992 conviction to support its reasoning that examining appellant's history and characteristics, he had lived a life of lawlessness. Your Honor, the record speaks for itself. The record clearly supports a finding that the district court followed the proper procedure established by this court when fashioning a sentence. The court thoroughly analyzed the 3553A factors and provided an adequate reasoning for the sentence. It did not impose a sentence based on clearly erroneous facts. Therefore, if there are no further questions, the United States respectfully requests that this court affirm the district court's sentence of 262 months as reasonable.
I have a modest question. It has nothing to do with the case.
Yes, Your Honor.
What is a special assistant U.S. attorney?
It's a term position where it's a one-year term position with the U.S. Attorney's Office.
A one-year term?
Yes, Your Honor.
They only appoint you for the year, and after that you're gone?
Yes, Your Honor. It's my understanding.
You go back to another job. Is that how it works?
Yes, Your Honor.
You take it sort of like a...
What other job do you go back to?
Well,
still work for the government, or
it's up to me in terms of which job I want to pursue.
You can pick any job you want.
Did you have a government job before this?
No, Your Honor.
You can pick any job you want. Take the United States Court of Appeals.
If there was no
room,
Your Honor, I'd certainly take it.
Live for a long time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Lloyd. So, Mr. Hansmeier, do you have anything further?
I forgot to talk about the shooting incident. Our position on that is pretty clear. The context of how that was said, and the attorney's up there making a mitigating argument. You know, this guy has no violent, and then the judge pipes in, well, he shot at this guy. Well, that's a problem. But when you look at, what does it mean? I mean, this is when he's 18 years old. He's got his 10-year-old brother in the house, I guess. And, I don't know, gun goes off. It's not like he was shooting at people. That's a huge difference in my mind. Between
the charge was shooting at a building knowing someone was in there. So.
Well, that's true.
What was he aiming at?
I don't know. See,
the
thing,
where the bullet landed?
I mean, I could ask him, but there's nothing. The PSR is extremely bare bones on this because it wasn't an... And another thing, this was never an issue. It wasn't an issue at the first sentencing hearing. It wasn't an issue at the second sentencing hearing. And then all of a sudden, the judge just says it. Well, it's not. It just. Our position is it's not what it sounds. If that makes sense, it's just not.
It seems like a reasonable inference from the facts that are in the PSR.
I don't know. I think when you realize that James Mitchell, who, by the way, was at the sentencing hearing, that's not in the record, but it's kind of interesting. When you look at what actually happened, it just seems like that's problematic to us, and that's the argument we've made in our briefs. And unless anybody wants to talk about it anymore, I'll sit down. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hansmeier. And thank you, Mr. Lee. So we'll move on to our...